Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Telford, joined by Josh Brown.
Hello, Scott Telford.
And only Josh Brown, because everyone else is ill or off or not able to make it into the office. How's Josh Brown doing, though?
I'm doing all right. I'm not ill, and I can make it into the office. So I'm doing fine this morning, Scott, thankfully.
Me too. This is a bit of a follow-on from The Wind-Up. If you're not already listening to The Wind-Up, that's me and Josh's Monday slot, where we argue about stuff, where we try to have a big old... We ended up debating for, 15 minutes over the state of animation in things, and whether Spider-Man was actually a Marvel movie or a Sony movie. It feels like a long time ago, to be honest. This will be going out on the Wednesday. We had a big old debate on Monday, and every Monday, to be honest. But for the main podcast, I thought we'd talk about the big leak over on Xfire, put together by Tom Henderson, who's known as a Battlefield Call of Duty leaker. It's kind of becoming more of a overall video game leaker. Just getting out there and just saying that there was this delayed Ubisoft event, an Ubisoft Forward event, which is their live streamy type thing. It's kind of their version of a Nintendo Direct. And it was apparently meant to be going ahead very soon. It was meant to be definitely before E3, which is obviously coming later in June. But everything's been pushed back because of the ongoing global events, the ongoing stuff with Ukraine and Russia, etc. And so he's just got out there and said, look, here's information on 20 games that Ubisoft are either about to announce or they already have announced. Here's some updated info on each of them. So I just thought we'd break down the biggest ones in that report, because there are some things in here that haven't been announced yet, like a new Prince of Persia game, and there's updates on a whole on everything else that they've got in production. So I've tried to condense everything. I don't have all 20 because some of them are mobile titles, so I've just gone with the biggest things, and the ones that are the most fun to talk about. So we should talk about Assassin's Creed Rift, which is the more apparently more linear return to Assassin's Creed. Not necessarily that Assassin's Creed was ever linear, but that franchise has bloated the F out since Origins and Odyssey and everything. And this is the game where you play as Bastion, who's a character who was brought in Odyssey, I think.
Really?
He's not in Origins, I don't think.
I can't remember now.
Either way, Bassem is definitely in Valhalla anyway. So yes. they were going to do Valhalla DLC, and this has turned into a full Assassin's Creed game. The release date is penciled in for 2022 to 2023. And it's apparently it's meant as a bridge between like now and Assassin's Creed Infinity, which actually I'll throw in Assassin's Creed Infinity as well. And we can talk about all the Creed stuff, because Ubisoft are planning Assassin's Creed Infinity, which I quote from Henderson's report, will tie all the future Assassin's Creed titles together into a live service, and it's being developed by several Ubisoft studios, including Montreal and Quebec. It's apparently the most ambitious thing they've done. The Animus will reportedly play a huge role in this hub for Assassin's Creed games. With it, players can be transported into any time setting they like, with additional settings and content to be added throughout the years to come. This sounds like it'll never end.
That is a lot of Assassin's Creed, man.
It is a bit.
You mentioned there about Assassin's Creed kind of becoming this big bloated thing, and yes. I look at that Assassin's Creed Infinity, and I look at how big and how ambitious that thing is going to be, and it makes me scared, Scott, because Assassin's Creed being a live service is one thing, it being this platform for content where you can jump around different time periods, as Tom Henderson writes there, like that kind of sounds exciting, but also that's a huge project you've got.
Oh, yeah.
With those two studios, you must have like close to 1,000, if not more, developers on this game.
Well, do you remember when Assassin's Creed Unity was coming out, or came out? And it was revealed that it was like 24 or 25 Ubisoft studios worked on that game.
Right,
and obviously
yeah.
Unity was an entire tire fire. But like that whole thing of Ubisoft going like, let's put all the eggs in one basket. Like obviously there's a lot of games we're going to talk about here, but Assassin's Creed still feels like their big golden goose thing. It still feels like that's what they're like focusing the most on.
In what? Right. This transformation, it might turn out well, but I'm just kind of looking at it and thinking, why now? Like, why are you changing the formula now? Like, I don't love the formula that they have with Valhalla Odyssey, Origins, and what have you. But those games are selling well. It's not like a Unity kind of situation where the annualization sort of hit a peak and they needed to reinvent themselves. Mm. For my money, and from what I can tell from the sales figures and stuff, you know, people are still enjoying the current iteration of Assassin's Creed. Mm. And to me, this is them just kind of wanting more, perhaps.
Well, the thing that's like, really weird.
We make this a platform and add microtransactions even more so than we do.
Well, it feels like Valhalla's kind of become its own little platform because they're still doing a whole bunch of DLC for that game alongside, because like I said, this Rift thing started as DLC. This is going to become a full game, but they are doing another season of content, Dawn of Ragnarok, I think it's called.
Yeah.
And so they're doing all that stuff, but it's really weird. I can't imagine, maybe the kids are just so different to us, but I can't imagine playing the same game that much, like for years and years and years. Well, like, I mean, I know that we get like similar titles. You can maybe make the case that Elden Ring is quite similar mechanics to a Dark Souls or something, but literally to be playing the same set of mechanics to the core over and over again, like to the point where, you know, like if you dedicated yourself to as much Assassin's Creed content as they're putting out, you would only ever play Assassin's Creed. And it's like you would go from Origins into Odyssey into Valhalla into the DLC into Rift into Infinity, and they want you to just sit there playing the same thing forever with different stories being plugged in.
It depends how they do it for me, because I fully agree that there's no way that I could play, you know, Odyssey, Origins, Valhalla back to back. I could barely get through Valhalla by the end because it was just kind of so repetitive. Mm-hmm. However, I do think there's something in kind of having this hub that they can plug different sort of timelines into or different time periods.
Maybe they finally do Japan.
Campaigns. Maybe they finally do. To me, that is fascinating. And it's all in the execution. It's how bloated those experiences feel that are being plugged in. If things are kind of like maybe more focused, maybe tighter, maybe the content's tighter, more focused, to me, that might alleviate the problem of just playing the same thing over and over again. Maybe this allows them to get away from just having them do the copy-paste side mission design of, you know, raid this castle, you know, do this side mission, and it all just feels the same over 70 hours, nothing changes. Hopefully, if in my, you know, utopian view of this project, what I want Assassin's Creed Infinity to be is a place where they can plug in tighter campaigns that more resemble the older Assassin's Creed games.
Well, I think, like, I love Assassin's Creed Freedom Cry. I really like Liberation. I like the attempts they've done before to go, like, here's one character for, like, a 4-5 hour game, nice and tight, nice little, like, you know, amount of story, enough drive to see it through, and it obviously plays off the best parts of the gameplay. Like, that's why Freedom Cry was a nice little bite-sized Assassin's Creed to go back to if you've not played it. Like, I played that a few years ago, like, but having not played a regular Assassin's Creed in so long, other than the, like, Origins into Odyssey, whatever, like, I've played all those ones, but for a traditional Assassin's Creed, I think that they do have a way to do that stuff, where it's like, here's a nice little story, or whatever. It'll depend on the pricing, I guess it'll depend on the way that it feels overall, whether it feels money grubby or not, but considering where Valhalla ends, like, you've got Northern North back in, you've got the Reader, you've got this weird cosmological entity who's just gonna dip into different timelines under the proviso that he's trying to find the perfect timeline or whatever the hell that story thing was. But that lets them go, well, we'll do this for as long as it makes sense, and then this is the full timeline, and then we reboot it again and we do everything else all over again.
One positive that I think might come out of this is that they hopefully won't waste time periods anymore, because for as many Assassin's Creed games as there have been over the past few years, there have been some time periods that I think have just kind of been underutilized. You know, you mentioned Unity's sandbox. You know, for me, that was great. You look at London in Assassin's Creed Syndicate, and these games got... these locations got a game each, but I always felt like there was more you could do with those areas, in the same way that you kind of like stayed in the same time period for Assassin's Creed 2, Brotherhood, Revelations, and stuff like that. You know, that was not always the same map, but it was expanding the same time period, the same kind of aesthetic, the same feel, often the same country and stuff. Sometimes the same city. I hope to see that in Infinity. I hope to see older time periods return and then be fleshed out a little bit or kind of given a yeah. next makeover.
I hope they do. If they go back to certain time periods, I hope that we don't just get, like I said, that same like set of mechanics each time on something new. Yeah. I remember that everyone laughing at the time, including like me, when they did Assassin's Creed Revelations and it was like the new thing was just a hook.
Yeah.
It was just sort of, oh, Altair's got a hook now. And like, that's the thing. And I hope that they, you know, if they're going to flesh out the environmental variety, that they start doing like, well, this game has this cool weapon that you can't get anywhere else or whatever. Just do something that differentiates. I like the idea of a rotating, you know, band of Assassin's Creed stories and characters and whatever, if it's tight enough. I feel like Ubisoft has become so synonymous with bloat, and I hope they don't start just giving us massively bloated spaces over and over again.
Well,
because that's what they've been doing.
Well, I mean, you know, putting my cynical hat on for a second, I see that being the result of this, because you've got two of these, like I said, you know, you've got two of these huge studios working on this one game.
Mm-hmm.
How can that not be bloated? How can they not all be wanting to get their ideas in there?
True.
Yeah, to me, it's just, it's what you said at the beginning, it's putting all the eggs in a basket, and I just don't trust Ubisoft to make a good meal with those eggs.
Speaking of making a good meal with some eggs, how do you feel about Ghost Recon Frontline, battle royale? Let me quote something from this report. Apparently, Ubisoft would like this to be their primary vehicle for NFT usage, and Ubisoft plans to integrate NFTs on a much bigger scale than anything previously. The current release date is unknown, and my gut says that actually this won't make it out because of how much people hated Frontline. But of course, according to Henderson, they want that this thing to be NFT AF.
You know, in Harry Potter, where like you see Voldemort in that kind of like nether realm, where he's like all like a shrinkled fetus, like he's dead.
Yeah, a shrinkled fetus.
Yeah, that's what this shrinkled makes me kind of feel like on the inside. Yeah. I love Ghost Recon, man. I think the Ghost Recon franchise is well overdue. You know, a big return to form. Mm. I even like Ghost Recon Wildlands, where they try to reinvent the formula there. Mm-hmm. That franchise for me has always had a soft spot in my heart. So to see it go battle royale, to see it be this platform for NFTs, it's just, why Ubisoft, why are you doing this? I just thought with Ubisoft, man, like when they when the reports came out, not only about all of the horrific allegations, you know, abuse allegations that were going on, mm-hmm. but from the creative standpoint as well, where they were talking about how, you know, there was a bunch of guys there kind of pushing for the same set of mechanics in each game, you know, a formula. I thought when that formula left,
same, they would stop doing it.
Something interesting would replace it, but what's replaced it, it seems from what they've already announced and these leaks, is just like an intense focus on live services. And honestly, I prefer the formula. I actually want the formula back. If it's between live service NFTs, Scott Tilford.
I mean,
the crap formula back.
The thing is, like, in regards to the brand, Ghost Recon, to me, hasn't felt like Ghost Recon in a long time. Like, my touchstone, my reference point for Ghost Recon is Advanced Warfighter. And I like Future Soldier. I like the things when they started fleshing out the third person stuff a bit more. But for me, Ghost Recon now just feels like The Division. They feel like the exact same thing. Like, and obviously, like, Ghost Recon has a bit more of a tactical edge. You can kind of do squad commands, but they don't really do enough with it. Whatever. In regards to that IP feel, for me, Ghost Recon is lost. Like, it's just gone. Like, it would need a full reboot at this point. NFTs, reading this report was, I had a whole, I was like, NFTs were a thing. Like, remember that? Like, the start of this year, they were everywhere. Everyone from Ozzy Osbourne to all these different game devs were like, oh, we're doing NFTs now, guys. And then everyone went, can you not? And they went, all right, sorry.
Yeah.
And I thought everyone backed off. Like, there was that horrible interview between Jimmy Fallon and Paris Hilton. And they're just showing off the NFT monkeys they've bought. And
dystopian.
It's like, this is pure dystopia. This is like being in the Hunger Games with like watching the upper classes be completely disconnected. But yeah, point being that I thought NFTs were done. If they're attempting to build a whole game around it, I guess there's precedent. Peter Molyneux's making it work. Like his weird little...
Oh, is like, he? Making it work is very generous.
He's making a lot of money. I mean, none of it's in actual cash. It's all in weird NFT currency, cryptocurrency. But yeah, the weird cyber hellscape that is cryptocurrency continues to apparently be a thing that's someone at Ubisoft believes in, which is what Ghost Recon Frontline is going to be. So Battle Royale NFT is that thing. Like I said, release date unknown. But speaking of The Division Heartland is their free-to-play Division game, which apparently is about to drop. According to Henderson, it's almost ready to release, and he thinks it'll drop in the next few months. The release date is penciled between April and March. April 2022. It's in March 2023 at the most, but he still thinks that it'll be mid-2022. This also kind of feels like a typo, since he said it'll come in the next few months. But whatever. Point being that they're doing a free-to-play Division. Now, I guess that ticks the box of third person action military thing.
Yeah.
Why not?
I guess. I mean, you know, they Ubisoft as a company said that they were all in on free to play stuff now. So if this is their kind of first big attempt at that with a known franchise, like, I won't be there for it. But someone might is the thing.
I've actually played a weird amount of The Division. Like, I played a lot of Division 1. Like, it's really repetitive. I love cover systems. I love third-person shooting. I just didn't like how basic it was. Like, it was just take cover and take pot shots. It wasn't anything else. Like, you weren't really doing cool transitions between cover. You weren't doing, like, stealth kills over cover. Like, it didn't really use cover very well, really, other than the most basic way. And then Division 2 was just more of that. And I feel like if that's what you want, like a loot shooter, cover shooter, it ticks that box so well. But that's all it ever is. So I kind of want it to be a bit more fleshed out, but at the same time, I guess they know exactly what grind they're monetizing, so it'll be more of that. If anything, you remove the entry fee and just give it to people and just go, well, here's infinite content. I mean, the one thing they did do, I think it's Division 2's DLC, where they had that procedurally generated underground thing. And it was really, really cool. It was called, like, the Subway DLC or something.
I don't think I ever saw that.
It was really neat, and it was just, like, it's that whole idea of, like, taking chunks of a map and having them, like, algorithmically generate an entire space so you never get the same set of levels over and over again.
Oh, cool.
So you just, you know, it's like a dungeon crawl, but in, like, a military third-person context. And I was like, this is kind of cool. This actually feels quite unique. Like, the whole, I forget what you call the name of that. Is it the Dark Zone? Where PvP just happens.
Yeah.
That's the sickest idea they've ever had.
Yeah.
Like, Ubisoft have ever had. Like, randomly go through a door to the middle of a city and all of a sudden you're just in a PvP area. Like, that's brilliant. And, like, all the weird survival tactics you had to use. I still remember, like, taking cover in that area and hearing a band of people come down the road, like, hearing them all talk to each other radially.
Yeah.
And just sort of, like, sitting there completely still going, like, well, I hope they don't see me. And then thinking, like, this is so cool that I'm, like, fearing for my life in this apocalyptic scenario. They didn't do anything with it after that, but it was really cool.
It was a neat idea.
It's a neat idea.
I wonder if it's going to be implemented in a big way in this free-to-play game. Because if you like, it would be cool to properly mesh those worlds. Mm-hmm. I think, especially in a more experimental title like this, you know, that PvP element was so cool.
Yeah.
Like, I think anyone who played The Division has a story like yours, you know, where you kind of have that memorable moment of being in this kind of volatile, chaotic situation where you're trying to get extract your stuff, but there's real human people trying to hunt you down. Like, that's, to me, that's a cooler spin on a Battle Royale-esque system than what the Ghost Recon game is doing, in my opinion.
I tell you what I miss, radial voice chat. This is a complete side point, but in, like, old, like, you know, like, proximal voice chat where you want, not necessarily opting into a voice chat. I get why they got rid of it, because you're hearing horrible stuff online.
100%.
But at the same time, if you were playing Spies versus Mercs back in the day, if you were a spy, you could get someone in a chokehold and then it would open the voice chat, so you'd be like, F you, F you, F you, and then you would kill them. And it was great. And I, like, that was it. That's, funnily enough, in Elden Ring, I must have some setting turned on that lets me hear people, because I summoned a dude in to beat a boss and I said to myself in my own head, let's do this, come on, let's do it. And the guy himself went, come on, man, let's do it. And I was just like, he can speak and I could hear him, and I haven't opted into anything, but that's really cool. I like hearing random people online.
I like that in theory, but also I'm too embarrassed to speak, so I always mute everyone. And when I, even back in the day when I was younger playing Call of Duty 4, I would be so frightened if anyone talked to me that I would turn the game off. I don't want to be about that life. I don't want to hear anyone. I don't want anyone to hear me.
Anytime anyone does any retrospective, like Nikki Jakey or whatever, does a big retrospective on the early days of Xbox Live, I do have nostalgia for that period. It was horrific in regards to the things that people said. But at the same time, a lot of the trash talk, a lot of the lobby chat, like I said, all that radial stuff, there was a quality to that, I think, is the word quality is what that should be. Like, they did enhance, like, competitive, you know, gameplay. I thought that stuff was kind of cool. Nothing to do with anything that we're talking about, but I miss that. I want to get a guy in a chokehold and talk to him before I kill him. Just saying that I want to do that.
Well, you can do that right now, just you probably will get arrested for it.
Yeah, you're not actually getting out of this room. The door is locked.
Thank you.
Next thing down is Immortals Fenyx Rising sequel. Apparently, this is just in early pre-production from Ubisoft Quebec, and the release date's unknown, but Ubisoft are apparently really happy with the way the first game turned out. Now, I feel like I'm only one of five people who played this, but it's really, really good, Josh Brown.
I know this is the thing. Like, I'm sure this is music to your ear holes, because you have been talking about and singing the praises of Immortals Fenyx Rising for like a year and a half now. Maybe.
Better than any Assassin's Creed they've done since, Black Flag?
It's crazy.
No, it's not. It's scientifically accurate.
It's insane.
It's one of the best open world games ever.
That is insane.
With a bracket of like top 50.
Top 50, that's a lot of games.
Top 100?
I respect that. That's it's getting worse. It's
I was
going to
say top 20, and then I was like, nah, there's a lot of them in there. So it's got to be, it's higher than that.
I do like the qualities that Immortals Phoenix Rising brings to the table. You know, obviously, it's just very, very much inspired, to put it politely, by Breath of the Wild, obviously.
Yes.
But its approach to open world design, I prefer over the Assassin's Creed checklisting.
There's a thing, like, it's not, this is a weird phrase, but there's something to be said about video games that are super playable.
Yeah.
They just go. Like, they have a whole series of gameplay loops that all feed into each other, and you, like, you don't realize that you've lost about 3, 4 hours, 5 hours, 10 hours in a go because you're just doing all these cool things, and you're not being sidetracked, and you're not being, you're not aware of, like, the treadmills that you're on because you're just enjoying it. And the combat in Immortals is so enjoyable, the way that they do, like, light attacks and heavy attacks. One builds up the other, so you're always building up a special. You pull that off, and you're getting more gear. You know, and you're always finding different puzzle dungeons. They're all really enjoyable to figure out. Physics-based puzzles, just like Breath of the Wild, it just goes, and it's so enjoyable, and oh god, I love Immortals so much. I think it's such a great game, but like, yeah, I mean, I guess for the sequel, they'll just do more of the same. Like, that game, you could tell what they were pulling from. It was Fortnite's art style with Breath of the Wild puzzles, with big chunky over the top, you know, cartoony art direction or anything. So
would you just want more of the same though, or would you want something a little bit different?
It's weird because they've already done DLC. They did 3 DLC packs. One of them just ripped off Hades. They were like, what if we distance the camera and make it look like Hades? And it was like, guys, this isn't how Hades works. But they try to do that. So they've done more of the same in the DLC. I would assume and hope that they do more abilities, because they brought in more character abilities in the DLC anyway. So yeah, I mean, I guess it is one of those, it's such an enjoyable set of mechanics that I think you can just kind of apply it to a bunch of other places.
Yeah.
But one of the things that I love the most is that the character abilities you unlock do feel like actual abilities. And one pet peeve I have is always if a game is like +5% damage, plus whatever, I hate that stuff.
Yeah.
Give me actual abilities, and Immortals, every single thing you get is an actual ability. So more of that, more actual video game abilities.
I hate everything that you just described there that you
what
hate
you
as well. No.
Oh,
sorry, I phrased that incredibly poor.
I love 5% damage buffs.
No, I hate that 5% kind of just meaningless kind of like attrition when it comes to leveling up your character. It's the same with, not to keep ragging on Valhalla, but like the skill system in that game is like crazy. There are so many upgrade paths and upgrades you can get, but it's all just, you know, 2% of this, 2% of that. You know, 0.5% vigor, whatever it is.
Whereas, like in Immortals, I'm putting a point into a thing, and now I can summon a whole bunch of spears out the ground to spear a guy in midair.
That's what I want.
And every single time you finish a group of enemies, they fly off into the sunset like Team Rocket.
That's awesome.
It's just like, why has more games not got that?
We've got flying off into the sunset like Team Rocket. We've got the karaoke from Sleeping Dogs.
Good.
And the mobile phone from GTA 5 at IMO. I think you need that.
You mean they're the three best mechanics in gaming history?
Yes.
Fair enough. I think, I saw Jason Schreier tweet this. Remember the time when every game had a mini phone?
Yeah.
Just going back to GTA 5, I was like, remember this?
Aye.
Trying to like use a little diddy little phone when you're trying to drive around on the D-pad. Terrible. No one does that these days.
I liked in GTA 5 online, maybe in the campaign too, I can't remember. But when you had money in your account and you had to put it in the bank, I love that. Great.
Why did you like that?
It was fun.
Let me go to the bank in a game. I hate that. Why do I want to manage my account to a game? That's the +5% thing.
No, that's a funnier +5%.
Did you play the stock market in GTA 5?
I don't know anything about the stock market,
right.
So I did not do
No,
that.
Me neither. I remember at the start of the game when it's like, hey, by the way, you can trade. And I was like, I'm not going to do that.
I'm not going to touch
no.
that.
No. Inflation? Who's that? I don't need that in my life. Next Ubisoft thing is Beyond Good and Evil 2, a game that I swear barely exists. But
yeah.
According to Tenders Henderson, he says, Beyond Good and Evil 2 now lies in the Ubisoft category of we've spent too much time on it and we can't give up now. He says that he wouldn't be expecting to hear much about the game for a while. The release date is just TBA. But like he says, they've invested so much money and time and marketing into it. So I guess it's going to be something. But Michel Ancel isn't there anymore. Like the initial team that were working on it didn't even know it was in production until they saw the teaser for it in the first place.
Yeah.
And then they left anyway. So who knows?
Here's the question, Scott. You
Go
mentioned
on.
There, and Tom Henderson also mentioned that, you know, they spent a lot of money on the old marketing, on the old development.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Have they, though? Have they? Is this game real? Is this game real? Or is it a get-rich-quick scheme and or a money laundering enterprise?
This thing, I maintain, only exists because they needed to stave off hostile acquisition from Vivendi back in 2015, 2016, right, because they were about to be bought out by Vivendi and they needed to prove that they had enough projects in the works that they couldn't be just literally taken over. That's why they did that weird E3 thing where they came out and they all hugged each other and they said, we're a family. And it was all like, don't break up this family, guys. Right. Like, we've got all these projects in the works. And that was when they greenlit Beyond Good and Evil 2 to be like, hey, look, we're satisfying the fans. We've got all these things going on, guys. You can't take us. You can't interrupt this now. You know, you'd break everything. You can't do whatever. And that's where that came from. Like, I massively believe that. I know that was doing the rounds at the time, but it's just this weird husk, this weird ghost of a thing that, you know, was sort of greenlit to stave off the acquisition thing. Because then Vivendi went, whoa, you're right, we can't possibly do anything now.
Oh, man.
And that just left this weird CG trailer. And this, did you see the game engine demo they did?
Yes, I did, yeah.
And it's like, what even was that? It was like a flying monkey in a spaceship and nothing else.
I mean, just going back to what you said there about like the kind of display of, oh, we're a family here at Ubisoft. Like, that's so gross in light of obviously everything that came out, you know, last year, all the allegations of that studio, like that. I forgot all about that. That just makes it, icky. Like, oh, man, I just hope they're continuing to do, you know, the behind-the-scenes work to kind of make that workplace live up to that, you know, fabrication that they put on stage. Mm. Like, that's crazy. But when it comes to, like, Beyond Good and Evil itself, like, I just, honestly, man, I just don't believe it's a thing. And also, I don't know who is even going to be the audience for it at this point. You know, it's been so long.
A sequel to a game from 2003.
Exactly. You know, the original's this cult classic from almost 20 years ago at this
point. Which infamously didn't sell in the first place.
Yeah, it didn't sell. Like you said, you know, the original team, one, didn't know they were working on it. Mm-hmm. The original creators aren't working on it anymore. Like, who is this for? Who wants to make this game? If there are people at Ubisoft who are really passionate about it, that's awesome. I hope it is good. Mm-hmm. But for outside looking in, it's just like, I feel like there was a time where you could have just pulled the plug on it. You could have just cancelled it. And it wouldn't have even... It wasn't a Last Guardian. It wasn't, you know, even like a Shenmue 3 or something.
Borderlands 3.
Yeah, Borderlands 3. To me, it just doesn't have that cultural...
No, not at all. I mean, the thing is that when they started talking about it as well, like, obviously, that's the thing. I said, you know, it didn't sell in the first place. That wasn't a marker of its quality. The original Beyond Good and Evil, I'd still totally recommend. It actually plays, I feel like I say this every week, it plays really well on backwards compatible on Series X, because it does. That game is gorgeous and a really good sort of Zelda-influenced, you know, platform with so much character. Even the Mamago Garage song, which I know 10 people will know what that is. That's such a bop. I'm just saying. The Mamago Garage song is such a bop. Anyway, Beyond Good and Evil is very much worth playing, but in an action platformer sense or whatever, Beyond Good and Evil 2, it felt like they were trying to rival No Man's Sky. They were like, oh, it's this big open space thing where you've got a ship and you're going to go to these different planets and you can get out the ship and you can explore. And that was the monkey demo they showed where he's flying around. And I know that they have a leftover No Man's Sky style project that never got off the ground. Like,
really?
There's a teaser for it inside Watch Dogs 2.
Okay.
And they were, Ubisoft at all times are prototyping stuff that might contend with something that might take off. So they'd apparently like prototype this No Man's Sky type thing, which there's a teaser for it inside Watch Dogs 2. They deleted the teaser after No Man's Sky bombed because they were like, what do you mean? We were never going to do this because No Man's Sky was like public enemy number one back in 2015. But I think they bolted that tech onto Beyond Good and Evil 2 and went, this is what Beyond Good and Evil 2 is.
Yeah.
And so whatever. But like my overall point is that the vague idea of this spacefaring Beyond Good and Evil thing kind of relates to one, but not really.
Yeah.
And then like in the teaser thing, like when I was thinking about the spending money on the marketing, they had that full CG reveal of Jade. Whatever. Let's move on from
no,
Beyond
no,
Good
no,
and Evil
no. 2. It's fascinating, man. Because
is
it's
it?
One of those, I think it is. It's one of those, you know, mythical whales of like the video game industry, isn't it? And if it ever comes out, it's like
Stephanie Harpoon.
It certainly is. It's one of those games that if it comes out, right, there's no way that lives up to whoever's been looking forward to it for 20 years. Like, there's no way that thing lives up to expectations in the current Ubisoft creative formula. To me, it's kind of it's like Splinter Cell. It's like, you know, wanting a new Splinter Cell, but knowing deep down that where Ubisoft is creatively as a company wouldn't do it justice how you want it. Like, you look at these games that they've announced so far, Battle Royales, free-to-play, NFT, live services, and it's like, how do old-school franchises like Splinter Cell, like Beyond Good and Evil, even fit in that mold? And I think that's why something like this is just taking so long and is clearly not a priority.
Oh, yeah, man. I mean, the thing is, this is a good segue, because Splinter Cell is the next thing I had down.
Ah.
The Splinter Cell remake, Henderson. I keep wanting to call him Tenders. Tom Henderson Tenders. Mr. Tenders. He was the person who initially leaked it last year, saying that it was they were doing a whole reboot of Splinter Cell, and then it was confirmed by Ubisoft afterwards. He says it's still in very early production. It won't release until 2020. Four at the earliest, but he does think that we'll get a CGI trailer quite soon. It release date is just TBA, but he says expected 2024 to 2025. To the point that you said, though, there's no way they make an actual Splinter Cell.
No,
they might make another Ghost Recon Division thing.
Yeah.
But like, there's no way.
I think I was maybe on Christmas holidays when this was like properly announced, so I didn't realize until like way after the fact that it was a remake, and I was thinking that makes so much sense. There's no way that they're going to take a gamble on like a classic Splinter Cell in the modern climate. So why not play the safe card, do a remake, win some fans over? It's so, to me, it's so blatant.
It's their Dead Space.
Yeah. It's like, it probably will be all right. Like, the original Splinter Cell still rocks. Like, if you remake that with cutting edge graphics and what have you, you know, implement a really cool next gen lighting system that can.
The thing that's really like funny is like,
yeah,
if you go back to those games, like the feel of them, they feel like PC mods, like in the best way possible. Splinter Cell is one of my favorite franchises, but it has nothing to do with animation. The things you would usually associate with a console feel, like animation priority or like animation fidelity or whatever, like it's not that those games don't have good animation, but if you go back to them, they just feel like a character is moving in a stock environment and he's thrown in, and it just feels like it's the way that like a PC game moves. It's hard to describe, but if you kind of go back to them, you'll know what I mean. They feel of a very specific time. And it's that weird thing where as Splinter Cell became more of a console game, like, you know, along with like Chaos Theory and then all the weird run and gun stuff they did, those games sold really well. The fan base hated them, but like Blacklist obviously was brilliant, but even Conviction sold really well.
Yeah.
And I wonder, until they said it was a remake, I wondered if that was just what Splinter Cell was now. Because if they release a weird remake of the original Splinter Cell that feels like a PC game from 2001 or 2 in 2024, like after the remake boom has passed, like Activision stuff is long gone. I don't even know what the hell that is anymore. Like, you know, like it's only for me and you at that point anyway.
True, which is maybe all games should be, Scott, for me and you. I think I'd take that. That'd be fine.
Oh my God, what would be the ultimate me and you game? Something that's really, really hard. But it has like a really cutesy character in it, like Tunic, a little Tunic fox.
I think it would be like L.A. Noire if you found it fun, like if you thought it played well.
L.A. Noire with a little Tunic fox.
There
I would
go.
Be all over that, to be honest.
I would play that.
Realistic facial animation. It's gonna be Rocket Raccoon. Next thing down is Skull and Bones, a game that I couldn't believe this. Why is this still a thing?
I don't know.
I remember when they mentioned Skull and Bones, 14?
Bloody hell.
Like, I mean, that, like, I mean, the pirate combat originated in Assassin's Creed 3. Skull and Bones got announced after Black Flag because everyone loved how much it was a bigger deal in Black Flag. But yeah, so apparently this game's been through development hell, obviously. Ubisoft now want it to be a multiplayer first game. There's zero combat on land, which I wasn't expecting anyway. I don't think people, people were expecting that. But Tendus points that out and says Ubisoft finally know what this game is going to be. So they know like what they're going to focus on almost a decade later. And the release date is penciled in for April 2022. But then he's got between April 2022 and March 2023. So it's like the wider financial year, I guess. Thoughts on a pirate fighting game?
When I said that, you know, they might as well kill Beyond Good and Evil 2 because nobody was, well, a few people in the gaming world would be, you know, waiting on bated breath. Mm-hmm. Even fewer people, I hazard a guess, will be waiting on Skull and Bones.
I mean, who wants this?
This is the thing, man. Like, it's just... It's like they had an IP in mind. They were like, this is going to be a franchise. And then in spite of all of the internal reboots, in spite of all of the years, the millions of dollars spent on production, they're still forging ahead on it. And it's kind of like, it's just like, why? Like, like it's not an established franchise right now that people are waiting on bated breath for. Even the gameplay itself, while interesting, you know, the idea of a multiplayer pirate game is obviously really cool. Mm. It's not something, you know, that's at the cutting edge of gaming popularity right now or anything like that. And it just makes me think, again, why are you still trudging along with this? Hopefully, the answer is that there's someone in there, someone just fighting for it, really passionate about it, wanting it to get made and overcoming all the hurdles. That would be great if so, but I don't have any proof of that at the moment.
I wonder if they look at the fact that Sea of Thieves was flatlining and then came back. Like, Sea of Thieves is stronger than ever. Really good community, really good set of DLC. Like, the very little I played, I had an immaculate 20 minutes with Sea of Thieves. Like, where I was like, you're scouting out different locations and you're working as a team. You're like hoisting the mizzen mast and doing whatever. All that stuff was really cool. Everyone had all the individual jobs on the ship. I know that's not what they're going for, but I wonder if, like, they do, like, a free-to-play, everyone has their own custom ship and you're working towards all these different, like, battering rams and different cannon types, and like there's obviously a way to pay to win to get through that, but if you see some huge vessel on the horizon and you know like that's a veteran player who's been like specking everything out and you can get a reputation on the literal digital high seas, that might be cool. But we're so many years later that I just wonder, and I would want to be able to invade other people's ships. I would want to do the whole Assassin's Creed thing and actually have like a showdown, you know, in the middle of like the battle.
For me, this is kind of like Fort Honor. You know, it's a cool idea at the concept.
That's getting good DLC.
Well, this is the thing, right? if we had waited, you know, this long for something like Fort Honor, like I think no one would care. But if you know, if they pulled Skull and Bones out earlier, if they managed to, you know, hit their, realize what they wanted to make, you know, 7 years ago and actually made it then, and then supported it over time, like we might be in a different situation, but waiting for it this long, it's just kind of, it's, to me, this is something you needed to get out quick and then improve on rather than wait this long, get it out, and then undoubtedly we'll have to improve on anyway.
I'll be amazed if the day one build is anything close to what, like, you know, people expect kind of thing at this stage. To rattle through a few more, X-Defiant has ditched its Clancy branding. It's going to be free to play. I didn't realize that X-Defiant, which is their Call of Duty adjacent thing anyway, is headed up by ex-Call of Duty executive producer Mark Rubin. Apparently, it's been developed in collaboration with various Call of Duty content creators, according to the report. The Prince of Persia games are mentioned in here. The Sands of Time remake is mentioned again, coming from Ubisoft Mumbai. I'm pretty sure it's their first game, but apparently it's been overhauled considering how negative the reaction was to the trailer that came out a couple of years ago. There's also a new Prince of Persia mentioned here, but it is a 2.5D game taking inspiration from Ori, which if I was going to take inspiration from Ori, that would be like art direction, color, and movement. Like there's the way Ori moves in those games is liquid butter.
Yeah.
And I think if they can do a really slick moving Prince of Persia game in 2D, like that would be slick, I guess. Like I think that's a weird way to reboot it in a new context, but like, you know, because usually you do a remake and then the new thing, if the remake is Sands of Time, but then the actual new thing is the 2D one.
I know
that's
a
weird beat.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I have played 10 minutes of Ori and I agree.
You loved it.
It is buttery smooth. That would be really sweet. And it's kind of like, yeah, you get the remake and then you get this kind of like new 2.5D Prince of Persia that's maybe more of a throwback to like the original. You know what I mean? Maybe they can bank on that again, because if you kind of blow Prince of Persia out and you make it a triple-A blockbuster experience, do you just get Assassin's Creed or something adjacent? You know,
kind of.
I mean?
There was that weird there was that footage that resurfaced last year of the rebooted 3D one with the Dark Souls-y boss fights and everything, and it's like you could go down that route, I guess. But for me, Prince of Persia is about the time mechanics and the acrobatics. Give me wall runs, give me all those cool puzzles and stuff like that, which I guess you do less of in a 2D space. But I saw some people theorizing that maybe this is the return of the Ubi Art division, which made the Rayman games, Vagrant, what the hell is that military one called?
Valiant Hearts,
Child of Light. Like, there were all these really gorgeous, you know, identifiable 2D masterpieces in an art direction standpoint. That all came from the Ubi Art division. I would love that stuff to come back. Last few are The Crew 3. Apparently, it used to be called Project Orlando. People thought it was The Crew 2 DLC, but it is another full game. Huh. Apparently, it has a new game engine. It's been overhauled a lot as well. It's been in development for quite some time, and apparently, it's going to be announced later this year. Mario and Rabbids Sparks of Hope just has an update in regards to a 2022 release date, and the game director, David Soliani, saying that it's a new take on the tactical genre. And the last thing is Roller Champions, a game that is... their kind of attempt at their Rocket League kind of thing. I played the beta for it. It was horrendous. It ran like absolute S. And it just wasn't very satisfying to play at all. Like, you're trying to, you know, like the weird movement system, the weird physics to the way that you are rollerblading combined with the way you have to try and take these specific precise shots. It just felt horrible. But Roller Champions apparently is releasing in the next few months, and we should hear about it shortly. The release date is 2022. What do you think of where Ubisoft are at with all these things?
You know, it's funny. You look at these in totality. You look at the full write-up, and I just kind of think there's no surprises here. It's so safe. The franchises that I do like are being transformed into something that I do not jive with whatsoever. You know, there's nothing here that gets me, you know, incredibly excited or optimistic about the future of the company creatively. I'm down on it. I'm down on it, Scott Telford. I don't feel good about it whatsoever, but I'm down on it.
Do you like safe bets?
That's it. And, you know, it's kind of like... You know, Tom Henderson is revealed this stuff now, but if I kind of like sat down and watched a 2-hour Ubisoft forward of all of these back to back, I mean, there might be something in there that wins me over, but just looking at the kind of games and the description of it there, like, that would be a tough show to sit through for me, for yours truly.
I think it needs, like, it's just that thing of, like, I still think the jury's out on whether a mass audience likes or doesn't like this overall push towards bankable IP. I don't know if the average person sees the thing that they know and is excited by it, or sees the thing they know from decades ago and goes, okay, like, yeah, I know what that is. Like, I think that's... Because that's everywhere right now.
I think you've hit the nail on the head there. For me, I don't think it's the IPs themselves that's the problem. I don't think anyone's kind of looking and thinking, oh, another Ghost Recon. I think it's what's being done with them. Yeah. It's either on one hand, oh, I know exactly what that's going to be. That's just going to be another installment of X. Or it's, what have they done to my boy? Look how they butchered it. you know, you see kind of like, still like the Prince of Persia remake. That's cool. But it's like we were saying, you know, I know what it is. I was less excited for Splinter Cell because I realized it was a remake and I'm sure I'll enjoy it, but I know what that's going to be.
Well, that's always the thing. Like, all they're going to do is try, especially with legendary games, it's like remake them, try and get back up to how they felt when they dropped in the first place. But a lot of that excitement was born out of the fact that they were fresh in the moment. All you're ever doing is chasing a ghost of what it was in the first place.
I mean
like, some of the, like, Immortals getting a sequel is sick. Like, I like the idea, if the Ubi Art stuff is true, for like a Prince of Persia Ori game that looks gorgeous and moves gorgeous, I get that would be sweet. I mean, they did a 2D version of Prince of Persia back in the day anyway, to sort of go alongside the Sands of Time stuff. So I don't know, Ubisoft are a very safe company, and I would rather they take more creative risks, but like, at least in terms of game mechanics, it's satisfying enough.
You know, a few years ago where they kind of delayed Watch Dogs Legion, and they delayed...
Keep forgetting that happened, but yeah.
Might have even delayed Mortals Phoenix Rising. Right. Anyway, the point was that they delayed a bunch of games because they were looking at them and saying, you know, these aren't good enough, they're not innovative enough, we need to do something different. What I was saying earlier about, you know, the kind of creative approach changing, it's just, I can't fathom that they delayed those games for those reasons and went, these are the solutions. Live services, NFTs, Battle Royale.
Well, that's the thing. I also don't know how you look at how much their NFT push bombed. Like, it was only like 14 people trading on that marketplace. And then go, we're going to develop a whole game around it. And it's Battle Royale. And it's like, I get that you've got a whole bunch of money men just interlocking their fingers. years going like, yeah, this is how business works. But like, none of these things are going to work, like, yeah, in that regard.
I mean, you look at the kind of like, correct me if I'm wrong, but Hyperscape, that was Ubisoft, wasn't it?
Good God, yeah. That's shut down.
Yeah, exactly. You talk about like the rollerball game, and I just see so many, I look at X Defiant, and I just see so many Hyperscapes. I just see so many of those on the horizon that don't even have a chance, and that sucks because people are spending so much time working on these games, and I want them to be good, and for that time to be payoff.
If there's one thing that the average person can detect, it's when they are being pandered to, and when they're being sold a very formulaic thing that doesn't do anything new. I think that's why the general like buzz isn't there for these games. Like, yes, they're new IP, which is something that I crave. I crave new things, but they're not new. It's a new name, but everything else is the most like basic tick boxy synthetic spreadsheet you could have put together.
I'm going to thread this into a reference that you might not get, Scott, but I was watching a video last night on a YouTuber called Todd in the Shadows, right, who reviews One Hit Wonderlands. And he was talking about in the 70s, there was this one dude who kind of like sung a load of songs, and instead of like giving him a solo career, they just took those songs and invented a band around the songs. And that's what I think of when I see these new franchises like X Defiant, like, you know, Roller Hyperscape or whatever. It's like, we've seen this formula before, we've seen this game before, and you're just whacking on a new title to try and sell it as new, but it's we know what it is. It's not new. Like you said, we're being pandered to. It's very much in the zeitgeist at the moment.
Well, X Defiant is literally Call of Duty meets Overwatch. Like, it is literally, the hood is from Overwatch, the gameplay feel looks like it's from Call of Duty. Like, that is, you can see what they did to make that game. But yeah, Ubisoft are in a hell of a place, and we'll revisit them in the future. This is just the report that broke, I think this morning or late last night, UK time. But we'll talk about Ubisoft going forward, because in theory, this show will happen, and we'll actually get to see some of these things. Then we can talk about the reality of where these IPs are at once they have some visuals alongside. But for now, this has been the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I've been your host, Scott Tailford, joined
by
Josh Brown.
Always a pleasure, Scott.
Always a pleasure to be heard by all of you, and we'll catch you next time.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kayla Itzinas.
I'm Kayla Itzinas, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.